You're listening to Body Banter, a podcast where we have conversations about the human body in all its forms and from as many perspectives we can find.
We are your hosts, Shagonye Dele
and Claudia Krebs.
And we are professors of anatomy in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada.
Anatomy is for everybody and everybody, and we're here to get the body banter going.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Body Banter. I am Shagonye Dele. I'm speaking today from Kelowna. That's in the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territories of the Silk Okanagan Nations. And as usual, I have my co-host with me today, Claudia. Hi, Claudia.
Yeah, hi, everyone. My name's Claudia Krebs, and I'm joining you from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, also known as Vancouver, Canada. And we are thrilled to have Chloe Angus with us on the podcast today. Welcome, Chloe. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you so much for having me today. My name is Chloe Angus. I'm a fashion designer here in Vancouver, where I grew up on the Sunshine Coast of BC. And I also work and develop, design wearable robotic suits. Obviously, this is a necessity that's come up. I'm a T10 complete spinal cord injury survivor.
Chloe, you have a very unique relationship to the human body, and I would love for you to share your story. You started out clothing the human body with your fashion designs. Tell us how that started.
Well, I was born in a very rural community, Egmont, BC, on the Sunshine Coast, and my family had an organic seafood farm 8.5 miles up Jervis Inlet. So I grew up in an extremely rural setting, and we were off the grid completely. So no TVs, no telephones, and you certainly leaves time to be creative when you're young. And although I grew up in what is typically a fishing and logging type town and wearing gumboots and rain gear, I always had an eye for fashion and a passion for that. And I saw dresses in boat ropes and skirts in seaweed. So it was always in my brain. And growing up and having a small Singer sewing machine. It was a hand crank that my grandma had. And I learned how to sew my first Barbie collection was on that sewing machine. And that passion for fashion and creating clothing for the body continued for me as I grew up. I ended up going to fashion design school here in Vancouver. I went to the Helen LeFaux School of Fashion Design, which was a small European school that taught atelier methods of sewing that I was really interested in. And I wanted to make clothing. But how did I do that from a very small town and in BC? It's not exactly the fashion hub of the world, let alone Canada even. But when you have a passion for something, I think it just grows when you nurture it. So I had an incredible opportunity to develop and launch a line with the Bay's Canadian by Design Department in 2004. And that got my career started. It was an incredible place to get my feeding, my footing in fashion. And I've been making clothing. My fashion design company is called Chloe Angus Design. And it is based here in Vancouver. I'm all made in Canada, and coming from a sustainable organic farming background and going into fashion, this was a far cry from what my upbringing was. I was truly going into one of the most polluting industries I could possibly look at. And so to make that okay with me and the rest of my family, I always I've always had a company and an eye on sustainability. And sustainability, you know, across sort of all platforms, the idea of sustainable environment, but also sustainable economy and having a Made in Canada line, but also a sustainable body image. And that was really important to me. I was going into an industry that I saw so challenging from a body perspective for everyone, male and female, but obviously, you know, female was so difficult. It, you know, everybody was, all the models I had to choose from when I called an agency were young and thin and tall and beautiful. And, you know, that I've always said it doesn't take much talent to dress somebody who was already young, tall, and beautiful. And I saw beauty and inspiration in all the bodies around me. And I also felt it was really important to be inclusive, particularly in fashion. There wasn't anybody, certainly with, you know, gray hair or over 25 in the modeling industry. You know, if you were asking for somebody in their mid to late 20s that was a size 8, well, that was plus size and considered, you know, an older model category. And so from an early stage, I really felt it important that everybody who bought my clothes, my customers, had a body representation, a representation within my line. And that was whether you were, you know, I've had pregnant models on my runway, I've had plus size models, I've had granny models. It's, you know, I've always tried to keep an eye on a realistic and sustainable body type in the industry, which when I started out just was a totally radical thinking.
I really love that. And when we talk about the inclusivity of different body types, ages, shapes, sizes, gender identities, how did that influence your design process? Like, how did your relationship with the body change over time of designing for these different bodies? Like, how do you clothe all these different bodies?
Well, interesting. You know, I became a body expert. And in my own way, I can look at somebody and analyze them very quickly and determine the best style I can create for them. And bodies are all about, you know, highlighting what makes us feel best and, you know, really hiding the rest. You know, that's what gives people confidence in themselves to go out and do what they were born to do. But sometimes without the right clothes or feeling good in your skin, and maybe the clothing over top of that, can leave people with a lack of confidence. And it's always something that I have taken time to make sure that I'm fitting people and making them feel their very best. And to me, that was the most important thing. It wasn't, you know, yes, I wanted to create great style, but it couldn't come at a price of body shaming or, you know, just not being inclusive. So for me, it was really important to make comfortable clothing that was also fit really, really well to a body. And so when I create my lines, I think of all of my clients and I make sure that there is a piece or a look, an outfit for each one of those body styles in my line, and so that everybody can come in and feel welcome and not feel like there's something there for them.
That's so fascinating, Chloe. And I like the phrase that you started out with, that I became an expert in the human body. And that's so fitting because it's actually segues into this question that I wanted to ask you about your own story, about your body and the changes that inevitably and unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how you'll tell us now, your injury that you opened up with when you described yourself as a T10 injured individual. How did your concept of the human body evolve when you consider your own body and the changes that happened?
Wow, now that's a big question, and it's been an ongoing journey. I think like most people with their bodies, but yeah, I went from, you know, walking runways and red carpets and living this glamorous, you know, fashion designer lifestyle, traveling the world. And, you know, in 24 hours, I was in a hospital with the best doctors in our country telling me that I would never walk again and that I'd go and learn to live my life in a wheelchair as a paraplegic. I was floored, to be honest with you. Like most people who get this news, I think you can hardly breathe or apply it to your life. I didn't see how that was going to be conducive to the lifestyle that I was living, designing clothing, and how was I going to change and adapt with that? It seemed impossible on that first day. And the shock of not walking and not being able to access the world around me was massive. But as the days continue and I learned more about what it meant to be a paraplegic, to have a spinal cord injury, I learned about the secondary health complications of living seated, of being sedentary, of living in a wheelchair, really. And that was much scarier than the idea of not walking. It's a wide range of ongoing health complications that have an ongoing and detrimental impact to my life. So muscle atrophy, pressure sores, problems with circulation, bone density loss, problems with bowel and bladder, and intense nerve pain. So this was eye-opening. And I thought this couldn't fit to my life the way that I needed it to. And I started to search the world for how I could change my situation, what opportunities would be out there for me. I'm a fairly innovative person. Engineering clothing is what I say. And growing up on a very rural organic farm, you tend to grow up and to be innovative. So I put my innovative thinking hat on and thought, you know, I'll be able to work my way out of this. And that's when it led to, I got on Google. I was still in the hospital. I got on Google and I read an article in Popular Science magazine that was about a new wearable robotic suit that was going to help paralyzed people walk again. And well, first of all, I was interested in the wearable suit that got me immediately, and that it would help paralyzed people walk. So in my mind, this was the solution. And I remember looking across the room at my husband, who was devastated and in the corner trying to figure out what we were going to do. And I said, oh, honey, don't worry. Just order me one of these off of Amazon. I'll be back at work next week, you know, because to me, it was just about getting back. And that was what was really important. Unfortunately, that was 2015, and exoskeleton technology was in the early stages. It was really only available for research, and I certainly couldn't buy one off of Amazon. But it got my mind thinking about some possibilities and about wearable robotics. And if I made pants, then maybe I could just make pants with motors.
I love that. You just were like, well, I'm a fashion designer. I design things people can wear. These people make things that walk. So we'll make pants that can walk. It reminds me of Wallace and Gromit. I'm sure you know that movie very well with the walking pants. Fast forward, you achieved the goal of actually walking in those pants eventually. So last year in 2022, you received the Courage to Come Back Award. Congratulations. That's such a deserved honor. And tell us about what led up to that award and how you ended up walking in Wallace and Gromit's pants. I'm just going to call them that because that's the image that comes to my mind.
My Wallace and Gromit pants. It is now obviously one of my favorite movies by Wallace and Gromit. And it is the life I live and work in now, which is absolutely eye-opening. And, you know, the first time I stood up and walked in a wearable robotic suit, it just blew my mind and it opened my eyes to what was possible. And not maybe necessarily possible for my own recovery, but possible with technology. And that was going to change everything. So once I got that in my sights, and after searching the world for a team that would help me build a better exoskeleton than what was available, I ended up finding one right here in my own backyard. And that's when I met Dr. Simak Arzenpour and Dr. Ed Park at Simon Fraser University, and they had a concept to build an advanced exoskeleton that I wanted. And it was everything I had dreamed of. I wanted it to be independently used. I wanted it to be self-balancing. I wanted it to be used in everyday life and outdoors, and it would improve my health. And finding this incredible team and sticking with them all of these years, we've been at it 7 years now, to build human in motion robotics and the wearable robotic suit that you saw me receive that very honorable Courage to Come Back award in, has really changed everything. And once I got that, as I say, once I got that in my sights, I couldn't let it rest. I mean, I have worked every single day to help educate and advocate for wearable robotics and the incredible impact this technology will have on people's bodies and ability to stay healthy, stay active, stay social, stay independent. I mean, these are massive changes for people. So I get out as much as I can. You know, we had to raise a considerable amount of money to raise this child. And it will, you know, it's an ongoing village that will continue to help us do that, and including us talking about it today. So that does make a difference to be here and talk to you guys. But the day, what was really important for me, and, you know, being recognized in the Courage to Come Back Award was just a great way to sort of show all of the hard work over the years of getting the word out there and explaining to people what an exoskeleton is, let alone what we're going to improve it to do, and that the needs of, you know, people with motion disability is more than just a wheelchair, you know. And it's taken a lot of years, but to have that recognition was a lot. And for me, I remember going back to my team and telling them, hey, this is a recognition of all of us, of all of the work we've done together to get to here. And at that time, we were just completing our device. We hadn't taken it very far outside of our lab yet, but I was determined that by the time I was going to be receiving that award, that I would receive it in my exoskeleton. And that was a particularly wonderful day for me and for our team and everyone who supported us to see me walk up and accept that award standing. It was quite something.
I am sure it was. And I'm so much in awe of you, Chloe, of the courage and the just the determination and the innovation, the imagination and everything that it must have taken you working with this team to come to this moment where you got the award. And then since then, I'm sure that a lot of people have been finding inspiration in your work, Chloe. And I just wanted to say that I'm sure all of us, Claudia and myself and B, we are very much appreciative and very much in awe of all that you've achieved. And so my question going forward is how this then has changed your own image of your body, if it has, as well as how this has come to merge with your original passion for fashion design. Is there like a meeting point, like a place where everything is seamless together, in at least in your mind?
I see that day coming, I can tell you. And for my own body, I mean, It was so traumatic to have this happen to you. Spinal cord injury is one of the most traumatic injuries physically and mentally that a human being can survive. It is so challenging to only have half of you work, and now to look at your body in the mirror and see it in a different way, dress it in a different way. You know, you end up at the rehab center and everybody's there, you know, in sweatpants and, you know, Velcro shoes. And it was a challenging time for me personally to overcome that and to find my style, to find my way back. And, you know, lucky for me, I was a fashion designer, so I could just go back to my studio and create what I needed and to make myself feel myself again. It was very challenging, but it changed my perspective of bodies too, and my appreciation for them. I have to say now that I never loved my legs growing up. They were always a little shorter than I wanted them to be. And I rode horses, so they were sturdy, and I should have appreciated that more. And now I sure appreciate working bodies. All of them, every type. If you can step up and down a curb, I think you're awesome. So learning to appreciate my own body in a different way for what it can do now, it's taken some time. But for me, it's really important to stay as active and as able as I can to maintain and retain the use that I have, whatever that is. So I worked on that, but the change for me is when I get in my exoskeleton and I stand up and I walk all around independently at eye level, I can hug my husband to my chest, I can work out, I can even dance now. That brings my body back to me. You know, people ask me what it's like, and I just say, it's just like being myself. And to have that mobility back and that motion, it's so much. You take so much for granted when you have an able body. And all I can say to people is, you know, appreciate what you have today. We're all only aging, so we're going to look back on this moment and think we were in pretty good shape. And you know, use what you have, stay fit, stay able, stay active, and, you know, appreciate that body is always what I'm trying to tell people now. And that certainly, you know, come from my own injury and that situation, that experience. So the Dalai Lama always said, when things are difficult, you can always look at it as a learning experience, and that will be something good you can take out of it. And that certainly, there's been a big learning curve to spinal cord injury and having a mobility disability, really. Yeah. But
so I've been thinking about this play I went to see a little while ago at the Fringe Festival here in Vancouver by Amica Hunt. And they put up this play called Anatomica. And the whole premise of it was a survey for the audience. What do you think humans should have? An endoskeleton, an exoskeleton, or a third type of sort of hydrostatic support system? And you know, an hour of this performance, you know, going through all the various advantages and disadvantages. The audience was split between endoskeleton and exoskeleton. So there was no clear vote for endoskeleton. And I'll admit, I voted endoskeleton all the way. But now I'm thinking exoskeleton might just be the way to go, right? Despite the challenges that come with an exoskeleton. But as an able-bodied person whose endoskeleton is working pretty well, I didn't have the full appreciation of what an exoskeleton can do for us.
Well, you know, that is so true. And what an interesting play to see. I'm sorry I missed it. Yeah, so I often talk about that wearable robotics is the future of all human motion. And that's whether you're building cars or lifting heavy boxes in a warehouse, whether you're someone like me who has had an injury and needs assistance now, or whether, I hate to tell you all this, but you're all going to age and end up with a motion disability, and you're not going to want it either. The wheelchair will not be enough for you, and it shouldn't be. We live in a world where we have autonomous cars and drones to deliver our groceries. Man walked on the moon 50 years ago, yet we're still working on getting a little lady like me to walk on Earth today. We have the technology. All we have to do is apply it. And I think we're lucky to be in a time. We've applied it. And this is what's so exciting, is that until now, people didn't really have a way to clearly understand what's possible with exoskeletons. And we're at a time where this technology is booming. This innovation is huge. And we're so lucky that right here in our town, in BC, in Vancouver, we have the world's most advanced wearable technology. And that's just incredible. You know, I liken it to the space arm, right? It came out of UBC. It's, you know, something that I think all Canadians are proud of, that we built the robotic space arm. And I tell people, well, now Canada can be proud that we built robotic legs too.
That's
go ahead, Claudia.
That's really wonderful, and such a beautiful way to wrap that up, that story, your story of the exoskeleton. And I think it really shows the power of collaboration across disciplines as well. For the engineers to work together with a fashion designer who has that expertise on the human body and how to dress a human body, in combination with the lived experience of spinal cord injury, I think it was just sort of, it all came together there beautifully.
Well, I'm so lucky and so grateful to the team at Human in Motion Robotics for giving me the director position for lived experience, and to absorb all I put into building not just what users want, but what users, you know, not just what they need, but what they want. And, you know, you asked me earlier about how I see fashion and robotics coming together in my world. And one day I look forward to a runway and a fashion show where all models are wearing exoskeletons. And our exoskeleton is going to come in custom colors and Burberry prints. So it's going to be, the future is fashionable in wearable robotics.
There's so many things you've said today that I just see like a headline. The future is fashionable. I just, you know, and your experience, your lived experience with your own passion for fashion design, and then your injury, everything has just, I think, shaped you into this wonderful, beautiful individual that we see today. And we're really honored to be involved in one way or the other with your work and with what you do. Tell us about, do you still do exhibitions? Do you still do shows, and where people may be able to find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, collaboration is so important to me on all levels. The exoskeleton is one part of it, but in my fashion world, and you guys know this, I'm sure, that the collaboration I do with Indigenous artists across Canada is such important work to me. And as I said, it is my first passion and what I love the most. Wearable robotics is a necessity, but art and fashion is where my love lies. And So of course, you know, we've taken some shifts and some change in the fashion industry since surviving, you know, many years of lockdown and COVID. So I have an online store now, chloeangus.com, where you can go and see the things that I make and collaborate with the artists that I do. And we're also about to launch some of my first accessible designs that I've been working on with others here in the industry. So lots to see at Chloe Angus Design coming up in the future. And I'll keep you posted for that exoskeleton fashion show.
Amazing. And we will definitely post all the links on our website, including a link of a picture of you wearing the exoskeleton. This is Body Banter. And one of the things we ask all of our guests is, what is your favorite body part?
I guess my heart. It keeps me strong and passionate and makes me love the world I live in.
That's so beautiful. I think you made everyone tear up.
I'm tearing up already, Chloe. And well, we also like to ask, do you have any least favorable part? What's your least favorable body part?
Well, I'm having a bit of an argument with my legs right now. If they could just wake up and get going again, I try and tempt them with very sparkly running shoes, which you'll often see me wear, and trying to tempt them to get up and dance again on their own. But, you know, that may be in my future too. We'll just keep talking about it. The moment, I just like to say they're dormant.
Thank you so much, Chloe, for sharing your story. What a beautiful arc from fashion designer, understanding, becoming an expert in the human body, then your own health story of having to redefine what living in your body means. And I love that you were still in the hospital. We're talking hours after your injury, and you were defiant and said, I am going to walk again. Here's an exoskeleton. Let's get this going. And you have. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's been a real journey, and I'm honored to be part of it and to be highlighted today to talk about it. And I just want to give others hope that this is coming. The future of wearable robotics is here, and you'll have an opportunity to wear them too. So get out there, have a look, stay active, and be ready for your exoskeleton.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Body Banter.
We are Claudia
and Chevron,
and we look forward to having you join us for more conversations about the human body next time.